Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, January 16th. I'm Ray Graff. All right, it's bonus time on Vox Pop today. Back in September, during our lockbox fundraising in the fall, we asked for 10 pledges during the gardening Vox Pop, offering a dead of winter gardening show if we hit 10 pledges. We exceeded that, so here we go. It's gardening today, our contractual obligation. We welcome Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery, Fred Breglia from Landis Arboretum, Bob Graves from Fatigan's Nursery, and Dale Isla Riggs from the Berry Patch. You got a gardening question? They're here. Give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or email voxpop@wamc.org. You asked for it, you got it, you pledged for it. Gardening coming up. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. All right. Ordinarily, our gardeners are here twice a month during the warm weather months. And it's a popular show, and they dispense advice about lawns and gardens and trees. And then we give them they work very hard for nothing. And then we give them a couple months off. But this Greg Ward guy from Ward's Nursery, a gardening destination in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, during the last time September, we were in the lockbox. And he said, you know what, let's get 10 pledges in the lockbox, and then we'll do a winter show. So if you don't like it, you blame Greg. I think it's going to be just fine. Bob Graves is co-owner of Fatigan's Nursery in Latham, New York. Fred Breglia is the director of the Landis Arboretum. Dale Isla Riggs is the owner and operator of the Berry Patch in Steventown, New York. If you have a dead of winter gardening question, we're all in. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Gardeners, how are we doing?
We're doing good. Great to be here.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. And I think Greg had a great idea.
What's that?
There's a lot to garden. A lot of gardening can happen right now.
Hang on. Before you do that, I want to hear about the bean goose, whatever a bean goose is.
I'm surprised, Ray, you don't know about it because Joe knows about it.
Joe does?
He was talking about it this morning.
I guess I should listen.
So there's a goose that is normally in somewhere between Northern Europe and Siberia, Asia. And they breed in either the taiga, which is the spruce forest, wet spruce forests, or in this case, that's the one that we're apparently showing up here. Uh-huh. There's another one looks almost identical called a tundra, which breeds a little farther north.
Uh-huh.
Now, the taiga bean goose
Shaped like a bean, right?
Apparently. I don't know where the bean comes from.
I think it eats beans.
Really?
It could.
Up in the tundra, they have beans.
Well,
anyway, go ahead.
Has been spotted in the Battenkill River area for the last couple of weeks, and several dozens, if not now hundreds of people have gone to see it.
Wow.
Amazing. Well, that will suffice for the bird show, which we had to cancel earlier this month because of political events.
Yeah, save it for the bird show. It'll be
Do you have an app that tells you when these things happen so that you can go and see them?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Fair enough. Bob Graves, what's happening and how's Fatigan's?
Hey, we're just getting ready for spring. People say to us, what do you do all winter? Do you close? And we said, no, it takes us all winter just
to get ready for spring.
So, but you take a lot of time off in the winter, right? You relax? Okay.
So much for that.
Do you understand the nursery business at all? There is no time
off. You've known me long enough to know that I don't understand all that much about all that much. Dale Isla Riggs, how's the Berry Patch doing?
Berry Patch is doing great. Like Bob, we're busy getting ready for this year. All the new seeds have already arrived, so we have all our plans made for next year, and I'm out on days where it's not too cold, pruning blueberries and pruning raspberries and sneaking in a little bit of ski time.
You do a lot of shushing, yeah?
Do a lot of
skiing, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. I try to, anyways.
Good for you.
Now, I will say I didn't have a goose to go see, but I did see a bear the other day.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
7-inch tracks.
Over at Fatigan's?
Up in Steventown.
Oh.
Seven inch long tracks.
Wow. That's a big one.
That's a big bear.
And he's out and about right now, too.
And he was out.
Yeah. Out and about.
That's not a good thing.
That's not good at all.
And not normal with this
he
kind
must
of.
Be we've really had pretty hungry.
Right, because we've had pretty good cold temperatures, enough to, you would think, keep him in.
Do you ever have to worry, Dale Island and Steventown, about bears in the old greenhouse running around?
No. I've learned over time, one of my brothers was a bear hunter, and I've learned that I don't really worry about bears when I'm more than about 75 yards away from any trees, because they always want to have a place to run to for safety. So we'll see them when we're out on our walks and stuff like that in the woods. We have a sow that lives on our place that tends to have 3 cubs every year.
Oh, wow.
But they always stay back in the woods, and every now and then they're on the edge of the woods, and they'll watch me while I'm putting out irrigation or something like that. But they stay back there, and I stay up front, and we all live together just fine.
And they never try to get those blueberries, huh?
They never do.
Wow.
Interesting. Nope. You think they would.
You think they would.
They're about 1,200 feet away from the woods.
And so it's like enough distance that they don't feel comfortable crossing it.
Right.
I'll be darned.
Exactly.
I didn't know that a mama bear was called a sow.
Yeah.
Huh. I thought only pigs were sows.
Yeah, that's the way it is.
Mm-hmm. All right, fair enough. Fred, what's going on over at the Landis Arboretum and everything in Fredville?
All right. Well, we're doing really good. We've been year-end stuff, so a lot of closing out grants and applying for new grants, and we've been getting grants, and we've been, you know, growing, literally, pun intended. And so we're actually pretty excited here. We recently learned that we're going to be putting in a handicapped, for folks with limited walking ability.
Yeah.
Whether you're in a wheelchair, whether you're on a walker, whether you just want a level path that isn't all hard to navigate. And a lot of the Arboretum is not, I would say, not super friendly for that.
Right.
And we've been trying to get a grant to really put in a paved loop. And we got a grant that's going to be putting in a paved loop
that's great.
We're going to do a whole series of plantings around that. That'll all be geared towards folks with limited abilities, but also folks with abilities and full functioning everything.
That's fantastic.
Are going to enjoy it as well. And the goal is going to be like, okay, so if you're blind, we'll have things that are really fragrant and things that you can touch. And all the signs that we put on the plants will all have not only the names for you and me and everyone else, but if you can't see, it'll all be Braille as well.
Great.
So we're moving towards that. We got
federal grants or state grants for this?
This one's a federal grant. And then from a foundation grant that we got, we put in a whole new heating system into the greenhouse and propagation room.
Nice.
So we're gearing up for Landis grown stuff. We're starting to think about what we're going to do this year, and the whole greenhouse now. So not only is the propagation room redone, but the entire greenhouse is all redone with heating systems. So we should be able to put out a lot more Landis grown plants. I could go on, but we only have a limited amount of time.
Right,
a lot of good stuff. And like Delilah, I've also been out there trying to ski as much as I can with the two boys, Freddie and Mikey. So we're having a lot of fun.
Fantastic. Well, everybody, I know it seems weird and a little incongruous to do this, but let's get to some gardening questions here in the middle of January. This one came in early today from Bev. Critters under my raised bed. Will blood meal chase them out during the winter? Best time of year to apply for success? ? And that's from Bev.
Yeah, it's probably voles, most likely. Voles. I don't think blood meal is going to be really great of it.
It's really hard
to repel
them voles away.
Right, they may not like it, but they'll still go if there's a reason to.
I would consider Delilah's PVC and
that's what I was going to say.
Mousetrap.
All right, explain again for those who didn't hear us the last time we were on.
Yeah, so what I've found works is we take a piece of about 4-inch PVC pipe and just put a couple mouse traps inside it. And if these are raised beds, run the PVC pipe along the edges of the beds, because voles will always want to stay along the edges. They don't want to be out exposed. And they run inside these pipes. You don't even need to bait the mouse traps. Just have them in there. And
they never return.
Exactly.
I'm curious, though, on those pipes, since the mouse trap's facing one direction, do you plug one side of the pipe so they have to go in one way?
I put traps on both ends.
Oh, so they're faced each way.
Yeah.
All right.
All right, this one's from Diane. We have a hydrangea bush, about 20 years old. It's not oak leaf, maybe big or broadleaf, not sure. It's a monster, 8 feet wide. It flowered like crazy last year, most in the area, city of Poughkeepsie. Did each time I cut flowers, new leaves would form and the stems would get bigger. I have not pruned it back this year. Can I do it now or early spring? Can hydrangeas be divided somehow? It is at the corner of our house facing west. Any ideas how to make it more manageable? And that's from Diane.
So if it's 8x8, it does sound like the panicle hydrangea.
I would think so.
Right?
Yeah. I would think so as well.
And, you know, this is a great time to prune them. Now, right now, you can definitely thin them. It's a really big thing to do, just removing a lot of the smaller branches, leaving, you know, as many of the larger ones, and then shorten all the larger ones.
I have taken a lot off of those at one time, and they just bounce right back.
Wow. They seem really vigorous. They put out a lot of growth. Yep.
It's hard to hurt them.
Yep, as long as you're not pruning them when the flower buds are there.
Right.
Otherwise, it still wouldn't hurt them.
When they don't have growth on them, it's ideal.
But right now,
see what you're doing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Kathy in Malta says, we failed to trim our raspberry bushes in the fall. Is it too late to do it now, or should we just wait or not worry about it? Dale Eiler.
Well, it depends if you are growing summer raspberries or fall raspberries. If they were summer raspberries and they fruited last fall, by all means, get those canes out, because the ones that fruited in 2024 are not going to produce fruit in 2025. If you're growing fall-bearing raspberries, which is what I have, I'm pruning them down to the ground right now, just taking them not even leaving half an inch. I don't want any little sprouts coming up. If you're growing fall raspberries and you want to have both a summer crop and a fall crop, I would wait a little bit. I would wait until probably about March to prune the ones that grew up last year but did not have fruit last year. And it's just raspberries are a little marginal in this area, and pruning them when we still have some significantly cold weather that might come, I think, is a little bit risky. So I would usually wait till about March to do that part.
It's sometimes hard to know what you have for a lot of people. So is it safe to say take them to the ground if you don't really know?
One way to tell is if you had fall bearers in the fall, there will be old fruit hanging on the top of the plant,
right,
or the old stems of the fruit.
Right.
If you don't have any of that, you probably have a summer bearing raspberry, and those I would wait on, except for the canes that had fruit last year, which look a lot older. And
so the older ones in general, you take off, you'd be safe.
Yes,
yeah,
okay. Absolutely.
So it's possible that if this patch has been established, there is a lot of dead wood in there.
Most likely.
Yeah. So they can certainly clean
take that all out right now.
Absolutely.
And then wait until spring to do the rest.
Yep. It's a perfect thing to do on a sunny 35-degree day.
Like tomorrow.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right, let's take a break here. It's, believe it or not, The Gardening Show, and Bob Graves, Fred Breglia, Greg Ward, and Dale Eiler Riggs are here to answer your questions. We'll get to the phones in a moment. 800-348-2551. We'll be right back. Fox Pop, Ray Graff here. It's The Gardening Show. Bob Graves, Fred Breglia, Greg Ward, and Dale Eiler Riggs are here to answer your gardening questions here on January, 16th now? So, all right, let's just do this thing. Let's go to the phones. Susan is in Southampton. Susan, you're on.
Yes, hi. I have a mountain laurel that planted about 20 years ago on the northwest corner of the house, and for the past 10 years plus, it's looked really scraggly, and I was wondering if I can cut it down, and if so, when and by how much?
I would do a couple of things. First of all, I'll check the pH.
That's what I was going to say, pH.
Because they really like an acidic soil.
Yep. And if it's been scraggly for a bunch of years,
it's something's not right.
It's probably not pruning that's the problem. It's probably more of either not getting enough light or nutrition. And pH is often one of the big ones.
Yeah. And so nitrogen, applying some fertilizer-based, you know, with nitrogen is going to probably make a big difference with getting it to fill out this year.
Yep.
The pruning part, we all hesitated when you said that because they're not quick at bouncing back.
They're not.
Rhododendrons are, but mountain laurel can be a little tricky. So reducing it, as we've talked before, maybe there's one or two older, heavy stems that if you took them out low on the plant or even near the ground, there would be these other younger ones that are nearby that you would not prune, that would sort of fill in the space.
You don't, when something's struggling too, you like to leave as many leaves on it as you can because that's what's going to produce the energy to have it bounce back.
Yep. Yeah. Those little solar panels are important to keep making food.
You know, that we always say 20 to 30% rule for pruning. Well, maybe take it to 10%.
Just
take out very little this time. Check the pH, as everyone said, so that you know that the soil is acidic enough. And if it's not, then you can treat that as well. And then just a complete fertilizer or something with some soluble nitrogen in it, and it is going to help it sort of fill out this this summer.
And you probably wouldn't be able to check that pH, and you know, unless if anywhere around here we couldn't do it. So, you know, not right now, not till spring. But the good news is that you wouldn't be putting the fertilizer down depending on what the pH reads, until that time anyway. So as soon as the soil becomes, you know, workable, that's when you want to take a random sample, and the pH test is only as good as the sample. So if you're not sure on how to do that, make sure that, you know, I always scrape away the top layer. You want to actually do a pH test of the soil that's underneath around the root zone. I've seen people take pH samples where they're scraping it off the surface, and they're like, oh, I get this, and then I take a pH reading from the actual soil that's in the root zone, and they're completely different. So you really want, you know, again, it's only as good as that. And,
you're probably going to want to add sulfur would be the quickest
and
way.
Most likely sulfur.
Quickest way to get you where you need to be.
Yep, depending on where you are. And we're thinking probably the pH is too high, and you probably want to drop it.
Almost always when you get an ericaceous plant like that.
Yep, and if there is deadwood in there, you could take that out, of course, anytime. You know, so deadwood. And if it's one of the live branches with some dead branches coming off of it, then just take, you know, don't take the whole branch, just take the dead stuff back to the point of origin if it's dead, back from the point from which it grew.
Especially if it's near your foundation, there's a high likelihood that the pH is too high.
From the cement.
And so obviously it can grow with this slightly higher pH. It's just by reducing the pH, you're going to make the plant more likely to do better.
Yep. Okay.
Susan, thanks a lot for the call. Gardening today here in January, 800-348-2551. Dale Isla Riggs, Fred Breglia, Bob Graves, and Greg Ward are here to take your calls. Peter's in West Stockbridge. Peter, go ahead.
Hi. Late last year, I watched them take down a Norway spruce in West Stockbridge. It was 75 feet tall and weighed 11 tons. And the people that were taking it down were handing out packages of seeds. And so I collected a few of those from friends and planted about 24. I think I've got 15 little tiny Norway spruce that have sprouted up, which I am very pleased about. And it's been like maybe a month since they've sprouted, and they don't seem to be really doing much. And what should I do with them?
And these are
the instructions that. Pardon?
These little plants, they're inside that you have them growing inside?
Yeah, the instructions said, you know, put it in a couple inches of dirt and keep it at 70 degrees and watered. So it's right near the wood stove.
Okay. Yep. So you do want to watch it near the wood stove only because it can dry it out really rapidly sometimes. And you want to try to get it as much light as you possibly can.
Try in front of a window.
Okay. Once they've germinated, I think I'd like to get it to a little bit cooler spot.
Yeah, the wood stove makes me think a little bit.
As bright and as cool as you can.
Yep.
And it's not going to do much right now there isn't any light. It's cloudy all the time.
Yeah, so even a sunny window's not putting out a lot of light. Right, not this time of year.
Yeah.
You're looking for that second set of growth, but it's, as everyone's saying, it's going to happen, but it's probably going to happen in March or April.
Yeah, March or April. Right.
And as soon as it gets warm enough to, they're safe, put them out. You can't keep them inside forever.
Yep. And then, of course, next year you would want to, the spring or summer, you're going to want to either plant them or put them in containers. Mm-hmm. And then they're going to want to winter over outside. So next year they're not none of these are going to want to come back in for them to do good.
Okay.
And then you'll need to put a fertilizer down this spring. I would probably hold off a little bit right now. But, once we get to like March, if you see a little bit of growth happening, like new growth, then that would be a key time to, get some fertilizer on them as well.
And Peter, great job at getting them to sprout.
Yeah, good job. Good work.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yep.
It was a wonderful thing to see the tree come down, too. It went to the Rockefeller Center, right?
Oh, okay. Great. That was the one. Yeah.
Didn't know.
Once you get to February 2nd, we get past 10 hours of day length here, and that's when plants will actually start to respond. So when you see a little bit of light of growth starting to come on that, I would actually get it under some lights and some artificial lights if you really want it to grow faster.
Okay. Well, Peter, thanks a lot. And I'm glad, Dale Eiley, you mentioned February 2nd. Because the next day, February 3rd, is when the WAMC February Fun Drive begins. And technically, I don't want to give Greg Ward any ideas, but we are in the lockbox right now. And so if you want to make a pledge, you can do so at WAMC.org. You can support the gardening show. It's always good to do that, but whatever makes you happy here at WAMC and is worth a couple bucks to you.
When's our next show?
We got a February show, but maybe we can do two in February.
Oh, come on now.
If we get X amount of pledges during this particular fund drive.
But we have a fund drive coming up in February, and now you're putting me on the spot. We'll see what happens. But in the meantime, let's pledge, folks. WAMC.org. That's enough. All right. Amanda's in Monterey. It happened in Monterey. You're on.
Hi. I've always gotten a great crop of tomatoes, but this year I got a lot of blight on my tomatoes. And so my question is, do I need to do something to the raised bed that I grew those tomatoes in? And then just anything else to kind of prevent it.
Uh-huh. So when you get blight like that, and I'm sure Del Isla's got a lot more, I generally don't like the plant in that same exact spot the following year. So it's going to be tricky to probably keep it blight-free if you're planting in a spot where the blight occurred pretty heavily the last season.
Yeah, there's a couple of things going on. First off, try to choose disease-resistant varieties because there's a lot of tomato varieties that have come out lately that are both early blight-resistant and late blight-resistant.
But are they tasty?
They are tasty.
Okay.
Yeah, there's several of them that are very good.
Will they make you grow, extra limbs or anything, or is it okay?
It's okay.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah,
right.
And it's standard breeding practices.
Yeah, most resistance, when you talk to plants, it's not like a GMO, genetically modified. It's actually just taking plants that of that species that are showing resistant traits and then breeding them, crossback and back breeding them.
Isn't that genetically modifying anyway? I mean, in a way?
Well, no, selection.
No,
yeah.
It's more selection. Yeah. It's natural selection. But
yeah.
we're picking these ones that look like, okay, these ones don't really show it. And then you're breeding them again, and you're testing them and breeding them again.
Okay.
So there is, other things that you can do besides that, in terms like rotating the crops certainly. So hopefully you have more than one raised bed, and you can move the tomatoes to one that's a little farther away
and start your way back.
Yep. And then if you don't have more than one raised bed, one of the things that helps a lot is to put straw or something down on the surface of the soil after the plant is growing, and that prevents the spores that overwintered in that soil from splashing up on your tomato plants.
Uh-huh.
The other thing is that a lot of people say that they got the blight, but it may not be what plant pathologists would call early blight or late blight. There's some other diseases that might be going after those plants. Again, getting some resistant varieties is very helpful, and something that will cover up the soil. I personally like straw because it adds organic matter, but you could use weed mat or something like that to prevent those spores from coming back up. but certainly rotate as much as you can.
Yeah, and if you don't have a another whole, you know, another raised bed, and you don't really want to build one right now, large planting pots would work really well too for tomatoes. I've done really well.
The thing to recognize with all of that too is it's the weather has a lot to do with it in terms of how much rain and humidity and that sort of thing is to how much problem you have.
Amanda, you want to follow up here very quickly before you're dispatched?
Yeah. Is there something in particular I should plant in that? I have like 7 raised beds, so I can easily plant cucumbers or something.
Yeah,
I don't know if there's something specific.
Most anything that, as long as it's not a tomato, I don't think there's anything else that you're going to worry about with, you know, cross, you know, contamination in terms of those spores.
Yeah, so keeping your similar plants somewhat together is helpful.
Yep, and if you have a certain light condition for that, so obviously you wouldn't, if it's full sun, I'm assuming it's mostly sun if you have tomatoes there, so you would want to put something else that's going to really like sun. You wouldn't want to, put a shade one there. But otherwise, just match the growing conditions, and I think, whatever your favorite veggies are would probably do quite well.
I would avoid putting potatoes or eggplant in the same bed that the tomatoes were in because they're part of the same plant family, and it'll have a bunch of the same diseases.
Oh, interesting.
Tomatoes
and potatoes are in the same family?
Yeah, absolutely.
No way.
Yes.
Are you sure?
They're all solanaceous crops. Yep. Yeah.
Wow.
I also like to avoid putting melons or cucumbers after tomatoes because of some of the similar root diseases that will go after them. So something like beans, onions. Carrots, onions, the lettuces, I think things like that would be best to put in after your tomato, in the bed that had the tomatoes last year.
All right, Amanda, thanks for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. A dead of winter gardening show today for you on Vox Pop with Greg Ward, Dale Isla Riggs, Bob Graves, and Fred Breglia. 800-348-2551. Or you can email voxpop@wamc.org, and we'll check the email in a little bit. Right now, our friend Joan is in Schenectady. Hello, our friend Joan in Schenectady.
Hello, my friend Ray in Albany, and all of my gardener friends. Hello to you as well.
Hello, hello.
Hi there.
Hey. Happy New Year.
Hello, hello. Hippie New Year, as I like to say.
Hippie New Year. Very nice.
There you go.
All right. Well, what do you got for us today, Joan?
I am inquiring about anything new coming along this spring. I know last year there were some really great new kinds of potatoes and tomatoes hitting the farmers markets and so on. Is there anything new and exciting that we can look forward to this growing season?
Well, the small fruit breeder at Cornell released 2 new raspberry varieties, fall-bearing raspberry varieties. It'll probably take a couple years for those to get into the garden centers because they have to be multiplied by some big commercial nurseries first. But it's kind of exciting because both of them were ones that we did taste testing
show. I remember that.
So we had three different selections that we gave input on, and they have chosen to name 2 of those 3. So that's really kind of cool, I think.
Yeah. And what are the names?
One of them is called Crimson Blush, and I don't remember the name of the other
one. Can I get one named after me? I mean, we talk about them
I'll ask.
I would like that.
Do you think a raspberry that tastes good is going to be named after
I don't know, but there'll be a new kind of blight. I'll tell you that. That's for sure.
On the flip side, if you actually found a new mutation in a tree and you propagated that and it grew true to itself, in other words, it replicated that trait, you get the right to name that.
All right, well, I probably won't go looking for one, but I mean, you never know. Okay, Joan, you want to ask anything more? You want a follow-up question here?
The raspberry is exciting. Anything else like in the more immediate future? You'll probably have those purple Cherokee potatoes coming around again.
Yeah, I don't know about potatoes, but I did see just yesterday that one of the seed companies has a miniature cucumber plant that you can actually grow in a patio pot.
Neato!
And we're actually going to get some of them to grow and try and sell, and to sell them like we would a patio tomato plant, but it's a patio cucumber that My understanding is the cucumbers are supposed to be like 2 to 4 inches in size, a nice smooth skin. So do a little bit of searching on the web, because every seed company, you know, is every year putting out stuff that is new and different.
And what happens to us a lot in the business is that these new things come out, as Dale Isla mentioned, but it takes some time before we can get them, because they'll come out with these new things, they'll advertise them in the magazines, and then everybody comes in and asks for them.
Yeah,
it's like
it takes a
they
while
haven't propagated enough of them yet to be able to sell them.
Interesting.
So it takes sometimes years.
Yeah, but you see that with trees a lot, too.
Roses and trees and
a lot.
Hydrangeas.
Oh, this new cultivar, and it's 5 years before you see it around here. Right. Yeah.
All right, Joan, we're going to let you go here.
Well, we got some stuff. Thanks.
Thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Stuart in Leverett, Massachusetts. Stuart, you're on.
Hi, I've got a, it's approximately a 50-foot white spruce tree, about a 2-inch diameter at the breast height. It's losing the terminal ends of all the branches. There's thousands of them that are coming off. I looked up all sorts of different things to try to figure out if it's an insect. I read that it might be a squirrel. There's just too many of them.
Are they
just
falling?
I'm wondering what might be causing.
Are they falling off? Like they're so you're seeing like they look like they're clipped off, like literally, and they're still green. They look healthy, like, right?
Yep.
So that's almost guaranteed squirrel.
About 3 to 4 inches.
Almost guaranteed.
You think it's a squirrel?
Almost guaranteed. Yep. Wow. I see this like really common
it's
right
really
now.
Really dramatic.
It's crazy. It looks really really wild.
They do it to several trees. They do it to oaks.
They
often.
Do. Yeah. They do. They clip them off. But I have been hiking through the woods throughout the arboretum and even throughout a lot of other wild areas, state land here or there. I'm always looking at different things, and I will say that recently, just some of the red spruce forests that I've been going through, unbelievable amounts, and just clipped right off, and that is all squirrels. So now keep an eye out to see if you can see them, and
get
I might
trail
my guess
cam
is,
out, right?
You could also put a trail cam out, absolutely. But I think that you've got enough activity that if you can view your tree from your house, you probably should see some squirrel activity in the neighborhood.
Love talking about squirrels. All right, Stuart, wrap it up.
Yeah.
Go ahead, buddy.
Yeah, I do have a lot of squirrels, but I've never seen any in this tree, and that's the interesting thing, but I'll have to look more carefully. But
all
there's
right.
millions of them. I just wagonfuls I rake up.
Yeah, and that's kind of fairly recently that you started this, right? You started seeing this like maybe a month or so?
Yep. Yes, this is the first year.
You're
too.
Raking
that
up squirrels?
Been there for years.
He's raking up all those tips there. It looks like somebody came in and just started cutting all those tips off his tree. The tree looks healthy, and it's
exactly.
only the ends.
Okay.
Yes.
Yep.
Well, good
squirrels.
Luck with that. I'm sure we'll hear from you as the season goes on. Squirrels are always good. They're nutritious. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's gardening, and we've already taken our first squirrel call, and it's mid-January. We'll be back. You see, the squirrels taste a lot like chicken. That's what I'm told. Is that true, Dale Island?
Yeah.
Yeah?
That's what I remember.
Yeah, delicious.
Not a lot to eat on a squirrel.
Well, you know, obviously our last caller has lots of them, so, you know, round them up.
You tried it.
No, I'm not a squirrel.
Put a little potatoes in there, some carrots.
I like it when the old gardening show goes a bit dark, right? We have Greg Ward, Dale Isla Riggs, Fred Breglia, and Bob Graves with us today to answer your questions, and we'll get back to the phones in a minute. 800-348-2551. Let's go a couple of emails here. This is from Jenna. I'm wondering when the best time is to prune my shrubs and trees. Now, we talked a little about this. I have roses and a saucer magnolia in need of maintenance. I'm in Ulster Park, Zone 6, and that's from Jenna.
That's great that we know. So
don't trim that magnolia now.
The magnolia, after it flowers,
yep.
you can do some pruning, so that would be somewhere between mid-late May, as early as that, or ideally any time before the 1st of July, so that it then regrows in July and sets those flower buds again. Mm. And then the roses, We assume they're blooming on new wood. Most roses do, and they should all be thinned and reduced, kind of like we talked about with that hydrangea. But that probably should wait until later in the spring. So late March, 1st of April. You try to get it done before the 1st of May if you've forgotten.
Okay. Let's see. This email from... Okay, more shrubbing questions. This is from Eddie in East Hampton. I've had very good luck doing my tree shrub trimming in March, magnolia, forsythia. Question, is it the same for evergreens, well-established 4, 5, and 6-inch trees? Maybe that's feet. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Because that would be a very small tree, obviously.
Otherwise.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, it really varies. It depends on what your objective is. I always like to say have an objective when you prune. It's just because it's spring doesn't mean that, it's time for pruning. You have to have a reason for pruning. And every time you make a pruning cut is an injury to a plant. Even if it's a professional arborist, cutting through the vascular tissue opens up a lot. I can go on for a while, but a lot of different potentials for insects, diseases. And overall, the wood is actually being converted to non-conductive wood. So you have to have a reason to prune. It's an injury. That being said, evergreens, if you're doing shrubs, I like to let them flush out in the spring so it has all that new growth. If you cut them in March before the growth, you get all that new growth and you need to prune them again. So you kind of wait till they kind of, fill out, get that spring flush out of the way. And then I come in, if you're trying to maintain evergreen shrubs, which I'm assuming this is what he's asking, then I would come in and kind of shape them and cut them back to where where they are.
I like the rule of thumb to prune when they are in a period of growth, but not most active growth, because at that point they have enough energy to heal the wounds.
Uh-huh.
Correct.
If you do it at another time, they may or may not have the energy to heal those wounds.
Yeah.
Right. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, the only thing I would say is that say this person forgot to do any pruning this last season, and they're trying to shape these plants, they can do some reductive pruning they leaf out, before they rebud this spring. Knowing that you'll want to do it again. July, August.
Yeah, summer pruning. And summer pruning in general is a good time.
Almost for everything.
Pruning, except for like maybe oaks. Oaks right now, they're the only time to prune oaks is right now. It's middle of winter. And that's because of a fungal pathogen, oak wilt, which is most active during the growing season. So if you have oak trees, this is definitely the time.
All right. A second question here from Eddie in East Hampton. If garden beds had mold issues at the end of last season, can it still be an issue after the winter? I would think the cold would kill off anything. And that's from Eddie.
Unfortunately, it can.
Really?
Yeah. Yes.
Cold doesn't kill off much.
No, and really it comes down to what Bob said before. It's climactic conditions. It's, what's going to happen this year. If the mold spores are there and it's not a good year, it doesn't have a lot of humidity and we don't have a lot of moisture and we have a lot of good wind and dry days, sunny days, that mold may not be able to take really much of an effect.
You don't even know what it is. Sometimes people say mold and they mean moss.
Yeah.
So it could be a lot of things going on
there. If it's topical, if it's something on the soil, that's a non-issue because you would just work the soil until that's gone.
Yeah.
But if you're talking about mold on tissue, mm-hmm. on plants.
I was assuming they meant leaves.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I don't know.
Like powdery mildew.
Right. That's what I was kind of thinking. Yeah.
Yeah. That's something you're going to have to deal with in season.
Yeah. Right. But that's a good point. If it is on the ground, that's different. That is a different topic.
It's the Gardening Show with Fred Breglia, Bob Graves, Greg Ward, and Dale Isla Riggs, 800-348-2551. Let's go back to the phones. Nona, it says here, is in Scanton, New York. I am not familiar with Scanton, New York. Where is that, Nona?
Not Scanton, Ghent.
Oh, Ghent. Ah, I knew a lady from Ghent. Go ahead, you're on.
Okay, so I actually have about three issues. It's so nice to talk to you guys. But the biggest one probably, other than woodchucks, which probably nobody can solve, just two things. Comment on the issue of kind of rotating your vegetable crop. I have to have a fenced area or I would have nothing here. And so there's a limit to how much I can move stuff. So the question is how long do you need to move your tomato plants from your preferred place for them? How many years before you can move them back there?
Yeah. For a home garden, if you can, it's best to do at least 3 years. There's some crops that ideally you would do 7. I don't expect somebody in the with their home garden to be able to do that long, but at least 3 years, because what you're looking for is that old leaf tissue to fully decompose so that there's no more pathogens sitting there on leaf tissue in the soil.
So, so it's really important to remove all of the leaf tissue, you know, as soon as fall arrives. As soon as it's gone, you should remove it from the garden completely. Don't just leave it lying around in there, because that's really hosting all of those spores.
And that material, I don't ever recommend composting, just in case, you know, you went that route. So if it's the disease, it's infected, that stuff's not, even though it'd be great in the compost, you're not going to want to put it in.
Okay.
Better to burn that. Okay, what about stuff in the soil, like pests in the soil or diseases in the soil for affecting roots and so on?
So by rotating, you're limiting their ability to affect. So if you're having some issues with your carrots or your onions and it's soil-related issues, then rotating is going to...
Am I right in thinking that if you till it a little bit and add some organic matter, sometimes that will actually cure some of those issues that you, if you get enough organic matter in it?
Well, certainly adding organic matter is great to do. I wouldn't use the word cure, but by adding organic matter, you're adding other microorganisms, some of which can be antagonistic to the bad fungi.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not curing it, but you're almost like giving it like probiotics.
Yeah, right. So you might reduce
it. Good analogy.
Yeah. Okay. All right, Nona, thanks a lot for the call. We go now to Southampton, Massachusetts. Richard, you're on.
Hi. I have a question about my beautiful lady slippers that I've been in this house for 19 years, and we had some naturally growing lady slippers in our front yard with some oak trees and pine trees and heavy leaf cover. And we had as many as 14 lady slippers until they started disappearing, and now they're gone. What did I do wrong, and is there anything we can do to get them back?
I'm thinking something's eating them.
To cultivate them.
I'm thinking something might be eating them, maybe voles.
Yeah, it's certainly possible.
Oh, yeah, that could be.
Or deer.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I hate to say it, you know, and I doubt this is the case, but, at the Arboretum over the years, we've actually had people dig a few things up and relocate them. Oh. And lady slipper is a really, really nice plant. I mean, it's a beautiful plant when you see them in the wild. It's one of my favorite, wild.
I assume these are sort of ephemerals. Upland. This is in a dry area. It's not a wet area, correct?
Yeah, it's pretty dry.
Yeah. So you know, though they do move around. I mean, I have not tried to cultivate them, but I have noticed over the years that you find them on a trail somewhere and you see them a few years in a row, and then you go back 5 years later and they're not there anymore. Trying to propagate them while you had them would have been, you know, a possibility, just collecting some seed and trying to disperse them. If the area is disturbed at all, they're not going to like that. So if for some reason they're mulching that area or there's some kind of lawn mowing activity or something nearby, I mean, those kinds of things can certainly affect it. The trees that they're growing with, if they've gotten bigger, may have created a stress that doesn't allow them to survive.
Yeah, but if you had them there, that means the condition was right for them. And a lot of people don't get lady slippers to do well. But we know that they did well at your place. So you could reintroduce them. And most likely that would probably do well again, because we already know the site's proven.
All right, Richard, thanks for the call. So, Fred, you're saying that you've had a couple of occasions when people have come to the Arboretum and dug up the lady slippers?
Just plants in general, like really nice flowering plants. So you'll see, like all of a sudden our pasque flower is one of the ones that was, a perfect example. It's right by the greenhouse. When it's in bloom, the pasque flower is like, wow, what is this thing? It's really cool. And all of a sudden you go in, a couple of days later and there's a hole there.
Well, and it's not an animal digging it out. Trail cams out everywhere. How can you not catch the perpetrator?
We don't have that many. We don't have that many trail
cams. We've done landscaping jobs where we went back the next day and the stuff was gone.
Oh, man. Yeah, that is ridiculous.
Yeah. I will say that overall, we've done really well.
You don't see a lot of it.
Not much. Most people are very respective, but occasionally.
Yeah.
I don't think that's the case with this gentleman's call. Right. It's most likely that they just either needed to be reintroduced or a vole got them. But it is possible.
All right, we'll go to Troy. Linda, you're on the gardening show. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I'm curious. I've been noticing pot seeds available, like at nurseries and at the repositories. And I just wondered, is this something that we could actually, like, grow in our garden along with the tomato plants, or is it, like, just a house plant?
No, Fred, you got them at the Arboretum?
No, we don't have any at the Arboretum, right? Not yet. Okay. But but you absolutely could grow those outside. They would grow really well outside.
They're not going to survive the winter. You have to plant them every
annual,
year.
They're annual.
Yeah, they're annuals.
Just like a tomato.
Yep. You'd plant them, and then, you know, it would go through its season, and depending on what type of seed you got, it could be a really, you know, there's a lot of different varieties, a lot of different species, but not that many different species, but a lot of cultivars, a lot of varieties. And some of those are 3-month turnaround. Some of them could take 6 months. Some of them are designed to be grown in the tropics.
Yeah.
You know, so much longer, Mexico, a lot of different varieties. So you want to research what variety, because you want to make sure that it has a short enough cycle for it to work out for you.
All right, Linda. Bob and Greg, do you sell them over at your nurseries?
Not seeds.
The seeds?
I mean, we sell the soils and the fertilizers and all that sort
of seeds.
You will want to make sure that they are female seeds. Nowadays, you can guarantee it.
Okay.
So not males.
What happens with the male seeds? They lie on the couch?
easy there, boy.
Hey, the game is on. No. Hey, yeah.
I mean, they're fine, I guess, if you're growing them for reproduction in terms of what you need a male to get.
Okay.
Seed to be able to continue to grow, or if you're doing it for aesthetics.
I don't know. All right, let's go to Queens. Bill, you're on. Go ahead.
The show is deteriorating.
Yes, it has.
Well, you like it when it gets dark, you said, right? Here we go.
Okay, go ahead, Bill. Lift us out of this morass.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about lichens growing on trees. I live in southern Albany County, town of Queens. I'm on a 3-mile-long dead-end road. Near the Alcove Reservoir, if that makes any difference to anything.
Mm-hmm. So,
and I've noticed this year the amount of lichen on trees, and a lot of white pine and hardwoods, very close to the road. You know, the first 3/4 of the mile of a mile of the road is basically woodline, and the lichen on these trees is incredible. It's like driving through a scene from Lord of the Rings or something.
Forget about it. Don't worry about it. It doesn't hurt anything.
It's not hurting.
No, I didn't think it would hurt anything. I just wonder why this area, it's not on other places I go.
Probably related to weather and sun.
They see it here.
I'm sure it's a cyclical thing about, you know, so what comes to mind for me is, you know, what was it, 3 years ago, we got about 18 inches of rain through the summer, and you know that, you know, certainly could have been, you know, a stimuli for something that would then show up now.
Yeah, okay. A lot of times with lichen too.
Well, all right, it's kind of a delayed reaction then.
Could be.
Yeah. Sometimes you get a lot of people asking, is it, you know, my deteriorating tree has got a lot of this lichen on it, let's say, and people wonder, is it associated with that? And of course we know it's not. But a lot of times, because the tree is deteriorating and it's opening up more light, lichen needs a certain amount of sunlight. They actually like quite a bit of sunlight. So if it's a really shady, thick tree, you're not going to see as much of it. So if these trees are actually in decline, that would also open up more sunlight, and you would potentially see more lichen.
Oh, yeah. Lichen is not parasitic.
Nope, it's a symbiotic relationship.
Association, and it uses the tree for support, because you'll notice it grows on rocks.
It grows on rocks.
It grows on fence posts. Yep.
Right.
It grows on things that aren't alive.
Yeah, we did have some spongy moth issues, right, in that area.
We did. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so maybe it opened up areas.
Light. Yep,
and it is a symbiotic relationship with itself, not the tree.
Right.
So it doesn't hurt the tree, doesn't help the tree much either. Just kind of lives there. But it's a symbiotic relationship between an algae and a fungus. And I always remembered it by Alice Algae Took a Lichen to Frankie Fungus.
You remember that?
All right. That's good. I'm going to write that down. Let's go to Shelley in Saugerties. Shelley, you only have about a minute here, but let's roll.
I'll be really quick. Okay, I have 2 Meyer lemon trees. One did really well for 10 years. I brought a second one in from a friend, and they developed this sticky stuff all over the leaves. They fell off.
Yep.
I thought the trees were dead. I put them outside in the summertime. They did great. I brought them back in, and I'm getting that again. I tried neem oil, and neem oil doesn't work. Then I heard, like, rubbing alcohol. I don't really know what to do to save them. And
it spread
to 2 lime trees.
Yeah. You have insects on there.
Right.
They're probably, if it's a lot of stickiness, it's probably a little scale insect, which is the little bumps on the stems and leaves. And you can continue to use that neem oil, or you could switch to a horticultural oil, which is more paraffin-based. But what you're going to do is literally, you know, wash down the tree, spray it all down, and then take paper towels and wipe every edge and corner. Sometimes if this tree is not too big, you could put it in the bathtub and do that really well, let it drip dry. And you want to do that 3 times in a row, about 10 days apart.
The reason it did better outside is because there are parasitic insects that come in and take care of it.
Oh.
And once you bring them inside, there's nothing.
Can you bring the parasitic insects inside?
So generally what we recommend is you put it outside in the summer because they love it, of course. And then before you bring it in, you do that same 3 week in a row treatment, so that when you bring it in, it's much less likely you'll have the issue.
All right. Hey, Shelley, we got to go, but thank you very much. All right, Bob Graves, how do people find out about Fadigan's?
We are on the Troy Schenectady Road, 2.5 miles west of the Northway, and we're at fadigans.com.
Greg Ward, Ward's Nursery.
Yeah, 600 South Main Street, Great Barrington, Massachusetts, wardsnursery.com, and we're open.
And Dale Isle of Riggs, the Berry Patch, you're not open yet.
We're not open, but people can contact us through theberrypatch.net.
Okay, and Fred Breglia, the Landis Arboretum, is there a closed season for the Landis?
Nope, we're open 365 days a year, dawn to dusk. So it's at 174 Lape Road, and you can find more information on our website, landisarboretum.org.
All right, well, gang, what do you think? We did, a January show?
Lots of fun.
All right, so and we're booked for next month, right?
We got a February show.
All right, this
maybe
is
two.
I see.
If we do a fundraiser.
Do me a favor, talk to my agent, and we'll have some negotiations.
All right, will do.
Hey, all, thanks for being here. Support comes from Plaza Travel Center. Small group trips from Albany to Iceland, Vietnam, Scotland, and more. For trip details, gene@plazatravel.net. Once again, thanks to Fred Breglia, Bob Graves, Greg Ward, and Dale Isle of Riggs for being here. I think that was fairly successful for January. We'll do a gardening show next month. Thanks to our call screener, Susie Chekai, no shabby gardener in her own right. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow it's Food Friday. It's cheese time, baby. Mary Rizzo of The Cheese Traveler and Shalina Bridgham of Four Fat Fowl will talk about fermented curd and such. We'll see you tomorrow at 2:00.